on your part.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm JT Ayers, the host, and you've heard my voice a thousand times. And if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome. We're glad you're here. But On Track and Field is where you need to go, one-stop shop. They are the sole sponsor of this podcast, and I am a head coach, and I work with them. I wouldn't be doing this podcast unless I believed in their cause, and their cause is to give you the best of the best at a price that's reasonable with customer service that's, well, let me just put it this way. The CEO drove down a trailer 2.5 hours or whatever it was in LA traffic just to give me hurdle carts. That's the kind of company that you're going to work with. So go to ontrackandfield.com. You will not be disappointed. And that's high school coaches, professional coaches, world-class coaches like the guest I have today, and, you know, collegiate coaches, anybody you need. In fact, they even go to their shoe shop and just buy some shoes. With me today is Coach Petros Cupiano. Did I say your last name right?
Yep.
Oh, awesome. Current director of track and field and cross country at the University of Illinois. Now, listen to these accolades. It's amazing. And I had to stop the bullet points because this podcast is only 20 minutes long. But he led the University of Georgia Bulldogs to two NCAA titles in 2017 and 2018. He was named National Coach of the Year three times, 2017, 18, and 2021. Coached 16 individual NCAA champions, over 100 All-Americans, arguably one of the greatest coaches in the world right now. He would never say that because he's humble, but I can say it because I don't have to be humble for him. But Coach Petros, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. It's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. So I have a question for you, and it's purely out of ignorance from my spot because I'm a high school coach. And as a high school coach, I want my athletes to have an opportunity to go to the next level if they want to and compete and like help out and be part of another community and program and university. You have been labeled by, I mean, just do an easy Google search, as a really good recruiter. Now, what is it that makes you a good recruiter? And also, what are athletes even, what should they be looking for in a place to go, like Illinois?
Yeah, well, that's probably the best question I want to answer for everybody out there, whether it's high school, transfers, whatever it is, to know. Because what is a recruiter? What is a good recruiter? Is somebody that is able to sell a product that is working, and it's a product that solves problems. It is a product that, you, in our case, to help you, you know, achieve your dreams and your goals and expectations. And I feel if you're able to present facts, and as you know, facts and numbers don't lie. You know, there's a lot we like to call them in college, in the college scene or in beyond. We call them the used car salesman tactics. But then you walk into a Maserati dealership or a Mercedes dealership or whatever elite exclusive product that is being sold. It's a good product. Like, that salesman doesn't have to do much. You just have to. Now, in the beginning, you got to fake it to make it, I guess, to get some folks to buy into your passion and energy and plan. And then once the performances and the results come, then it's a lot easier for you to sell it. But for me, I always had those three layers in my, you can call it recruiting or coaching or everything, is sense of urgency, attention to detail, and laser focus. Once you bring those three things and you put them in writing, because that's something I do that I believe a lot of my, everybody has their ways, and there's a lot of great coaches out there at any level, any division. I'm a huge mid-major coaches fan. I've been one. I start from D2 and all that. I believe what separates and why not Illinois, and you see our recruiting class, how good it looks, at least on paper. what I like to do is really lay out the plan. If it's like an elite athlete that I feel they can make it to the Olympics, I spend about 2 days putting together a 4-year plan. And a lot of coaches do a 4-year plan, and they put basically what they think the athletes can do. What I do is it's about 40 to 50 pages long, where I break it down to like the little, you know, what kind of water you drink every day, you know, and habits, and how are you going to get to those things? And what I'm really blessed at, I've had a lot of great athletes where they can either vouch or the performances can show that. And, you know, like, for example, Jasmine Moore's dad, one of my greatest athletes I've had up until I left Georgia, you know, I gave her that 4-year plan. And I'm until that second year I coached her, her daddy was so just like me, attentive to detail. And he was like looking every single thing I wrote there. Is this happening day in and day out? And he made that comment where, oh, wow, we are on track. This is amazing. And sometimes ahead. So I'm not afraid to put those things on paper, but also you got to be realistic, you know? So that's in a nutshell what I think some folks, you know, I don't know how to take it as a praise or as a criticism. Oh, he's a great recruiter. No, I think you are a great coach and you are able to, who was it that said, early to bed, early to rise, work like hell, advertise. I think that's Ted. One of these big, I mean, that's, you just got to do all that. Like, you got to put in the work and work like hell, but you got to advertise it.
That makes a lot of sense. But you said something in there, and I'm going to paraphrase. Like, you demand excellence. You want the best. Yes. From the people that are your coaching staff, from your athletes. And I know every good head coach has that. However, you've been successful at a high, high level, the highest level there is in probably all track and field. And how do you demand excellence, but also inspire? I mean, you don't strike me as a guy that's demanding in the way that's like cutthroat, mean, military. Like, I mean, it sounds like you have really great relationships with your coaches and your athletes, but how do you balance and hold intention demanding excellence versus having a strong relationship with them?
Yeah, that's the one thing, you got to put your ego aside. Like, you got to, a lot of coaches, like, they take it personally where I want to be very straight with the athletes. And again, I'm not a good fit for everybody. You know, I've clashed with athletes. I've clashed with coaches. And the reason I think that happened is because we were having a disconnect where I was very pushy and be like, hey, you did great, but it's not great enough. And then I would lay out, you know, certain examples. For example, like, it's funny watching the European club, European country championships or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then my home island nation of Cyprus, they finished 12th in the second division. They were celebrating because they thought that was a great success. And I made a comment out there and they didn't like it. And I said, yes, but you can't walk into a championship meet, and you tell them, oh, our goal is to remain in Division 2. And not drop to Division 3. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. So, and a lot of athletes, they want to be high five every day. They want to be cuddled and all that. And I can't do that. I just can't do that because I think I'm doing them a disservice. And I was very lucky that 97% of those athletes that made me who I am today, with their performances, have that. Anna Hall, for example. I mean, Anna Hall is an athlete that will make any coach look amazing. The work ethic she has, the brain she brings, the professionalism. I mean, it's the definition of, you know, go to bed early, wake up early, work like hell and advertise. I mean, those are the athletes I'm looking for. And I'm very selective in recruiting. I don't recruit a lot of numbers. As you could see, my championship teams, like, we won in the women's side with 6 ladies and 5 in the men. I love quality, everything, even from, you know, little things, water I drink to, you know, it doesn't have to be super expensive. You got to make sure that it's quality, like, has a meaning. It will be productive. So I want us to be productive and straight with each other. So they understand that now. Most of the athletes are eager to have a coach that will do that, but there's a lot that they want a little more diplomatic way and all that, and I'm not gonna do that, but also I'm not gonna get rid of them, you know. Or for example, you know, I've heard coaches that you know, they're in a hotel and their parents want to have dinner with them the night before the meet, and they're like, no, you gotta stay in your room. And to me, that's a big no-no. Like, you can't do that. And then now you can get away if those athletes still go out and perform, but it's just little things like that. You gotta have them be a little free. You've got to give them the necessary freedom. But when it's time to go, you go. And there's no athlete out there that doesn't want to perform, but there's time for their families. There's time for other stuff too. So I think just having a balance overall, you can be as demanding as you want, because then they will appreciate you, but you got to be careful, not let them cross that line, you know?
That makes a lot of sense. And again, it goes back to putting the ego aside, right? It's not about you. It's about the performance. It's about the kid. It's about making sure that, you know, this team functions well. So in that vein, how does you're a triple jump field event guru, but yet how do you go and get a good sprint coach? I mean, what are you looking for? Do you just get lucky and get a really good coach? I mean, how does that work? How does a head coach even go find these, you know, these coaches that are good, but yet you need great?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to find that person that is basically, in simple words, cut from the same cloth as you. They get you and you get them and you let them do their thing. And for example, you know, you have coaches in the past. I mean, my current sprints coach, Giovanni Small, you know, he's been with me. He was one of my first staff at Georgia, and, you know, Althea Thomas at Georgia. Like, those coaches, they wanted to come be a part. I didn't have to recruit them. I remember Althea texted me, said, "You want me? I'm coming." And I knew by watching her work ethic, her the way she deals with athletes, no nonsense, no high-fiving all the time. Just a true, and now she's the head coach at Vanderbilt. And giving her the freedom to do her thing. I'm there recruiting, like, well, Matthew Bowling, for example, and I always say it in every podcast, if it wasn't for Althea Thomas, Matthew Bowling would not be at Georgia. You know, she came to me and said, "Hey, we have this great 400 hurdler, Caleb Cavanaugh," which he's at Georgia now too. They went to the same high school. But in order to get him, we got to get his best friend too. And it's Matthew Bowling. Matthew Bowling wasn't who he is today. So I trusted her. So we go in and I put in the work and I sold her. I sold our weight room, because I run the weight room myself for the whole team. And for a sprinter, that's very important. You know, when your whole team is based on speed, strength, sprints and jumps are very important. And so it's our, like, little secret sauce behind getting the good sprint coach that has the understanding of mechanics and biomechanics and training theory and the way of dealing with personalities. But they also open to this secret sauce, you know, the strength training that we have. And I'm confident that I'm probably the only coach in the NCAA that actually runs the weight room themselves for their team. Now, I'm certified and all that good stuff, and I have a lot of help. But I think it's very important for a track coach, to run that. Not that there's no trust in the strength coaches, but they don't know track and field is strength and conditioning. In the end of the day, there's nobody in the world that can train your, given you have the knowledge and experience as a track coach, than the track coach to train those athletes. So that's what I'm looking for, a sprints coach. And, you know, we've had great success. I mean, as much as we can sit here and brag about my success in the jumps, I mean, we've had a lot of success in the sprints at Georgia. And even if you look at it, you know, Lynn Arby, 49.80 in the 400, Matthew Bowling, he won the NCAA as a freshman. You know, Matthew Bowling didn't explode, you know, last year. You know, and then you have guys like Elijah Godwin, you know, Olympian in the sprints in the 400. So, but what you won't see is a lot of depth. I'm just like one of these guys, like a sniper, you know, one shot, one kill kind of thing. It is a big risk. The Florida model is a very good model. You know, Coach Holloway does an amazing job, but he's a sprints guru. So if you want to duplicate that kind of model, then that's the coach you need to have, you know? So for me, but he does have a good jumps coach too. So he's doing what I'm trying to do, or what we've done, in reverse. So there's nothing wrong with either program. You just got to have quality coaches on your staff. That's it.
Okay. So you're going to go at this sniper approach rather than have huge depth. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me, but now you got to keep these kids healthy. So what do you do? I mean, are you like prescribing massage therapy? You're going, yes, you're going to do this or do that, as much as you are in the weight room. By the way, I've talked to a lot of coaches, never heard of a coach, even a high school coach, say that they're that involved in the weight room. And I'm a weight room guy as well. But I mean, obviously nothing like what you're doing. But here's the thing. It's like, if you're going to have five athletes, you're like, all right, we're the group. Let's go. I mean, you got to keep all five of those really happy and healthy. It's really tough. How do you manage all that?
That's exactly right. Like, I'd rather keep five athletes super healthy, super happy, give them all the attention in the world, knowing that they can handle it and they have the ability to deliver, rather than having 80 athletes and split myself thin and none of them really gets what they really deserve. And as you know, we only have 6-7 coaches. I mean, you don't have enough time. So now, going back to what you said, yes, I do. And I've done it at Georgia. Like, when I was given the head coaching job there, one of my first priorities, it was to, like, basically clean slate in sports medicine. So my administration, you know, we went from having basically one GA athletic trainer to 3 full-time athletic trainers, to having the Olympic U.S. team chiropractor, Josh Glass, that he lives in Atlanta. He'll come in, and he happened to be a former Bulldog, and he's still on the staff. And then Reese Hoffa, you know, one of the greatest athletes ever came through Georgia, big shot putter. You know, his thumbs are about the size of my and that's my massage therapist. So how can you go wrong with that? So I'm doing that here now at Illinois, at a smaller degree now, but once... You know, the biggest leverage you can have is success. So once we start having a little bit of success, it's going to get better. But I was very grateful that a man here in Jacksonville, actually, that works on Christian Taylor and all my Olympic athletes from last year, Marcus Comfey, Dr. Marcus Comfey, he comes all the way from Florida to Illinois once a month and treats my athletes for a whole week. So wow. He's one of these, like, very fundamental, not fundamental, but very attention to detail chiropractors that he can do all kinds of treatments. Plus our trainers, Randy Ballard at the University of Illinois, you know, he's been to the Olympics, he's been everywhere, a bunch of world championship hurdlers with the previous coach. So that's what I want to have, because without that, it's really, really hard to, like you said, keep them healthy and happy. And the mental health support, I mean, it's just such a great, like, NCAA system is such a great platform for these athletes to develop, because when you go to the next level, unless you're you know, Olympic gold medalist in the sprints or distances, you're not going to make enough money to support yourself like that. So I'm very grateful to have all that and the ability to fight for it.
How do you deal with the nervousness that comes with as a coach sitting in the stands watching the NCAA championships, or you're at world championships, or you're even at the Olympics? How do you sit there and handle that? Oh, I'm asking for a friend, not me, of course.
I'll tell you a story, and that might answer your question. So in 2017, it was in Eugene, Oregon. We're winning in the women's side, and we needed USC to beat Oregon in the 4x4. Because, you know, we had like 6 girls in the field event. So we scored like 62.5 points only in the jumps. So we were ahead of Oregon and USC, but USC needed to beat Oregon. Like, USC first, Oregon second, then we win. But if Oregon wins and USC gets second, we lose by 0.5 point. Before the 4x4, I'm walking from one side to the other, and then Grant Holloway, you know, the great hurdler, He was good friends with some of my athletes, and I'm walking over, and I didn't realize. And he starts laughing. He's like, "Hey guys, look at him. He's tripping. And I said, I looked at him, and I just kept walking. But then after the meeting was over, and then, you know, Oregon won the relay, and they won the meet, you know, I was upset. But then I went back and I reflected to that comment, and yeah, we are tripping, but we got to make sure we keep our composure and not show that to the athletes. And especially when you have this, we'll call it the sniper approach, that, you know, that's all you got. And there's only one Ketura Orji. There's only one Kendall Williams. I mean, there's no bench. There's not more, you know, but these girls, Michael Weibo, all these guys, they go out and they won 7 and 8 national titles themselves. And you know you can trust them because they have that mindset refuse to lose. So it is very, you can become a nervous wreck. That's why we should take breaks after that meet. Otherwise, you'll burn out.
I love it. When you have a group beginning of a season, how are you getting them to understand that they're a championship caliber team? I mean, how are you casting that vision? How do you even build a winning culture in college?
Yeah, you talk about it every single meet. You know, discussing with, because I like to learn a lot from a lot of coaches, even my assistants. I learn more from them than anybody else. Like, for example, Don Babbitt and I, we were talking. He was my throws coach at Georgia, you know, very smart guy. He went through four head coaches at Georgia, and he's still there. And when we started, when we started my first year there, he made a comment. He said, Petros, the only difference between this staff and the previous staff is that day one, first team meeting, you were talking about winning the NCAA. And we were outside the top 20. So why the hell are you talking about winning the NCAA? So you got to plant the seed and create that culture of excellence where if you don't talk about it, it will never become reality. Now, talking about it and not doing the work, then I have a problem. Yeah. But once we start talking about it and breaking it down, because you got to show them how. And I said, okay, Keptura, you go win. Tyre, you go get second. Kate Hall, you get third. You guys go 1, 2, 3 in the long jump. You start with 24 points, you know, 50, 60 points wins. So when you start like explaining to them and then they start believing it, because they're competitive, they're going to fight regardless, you know, and they're going to put in the work. Once they start seeing it, then they deliver. And when you have more than one of the same caliber athlete or mindset athlete, they push each other. They pull each other and great things happen. And I found out it's a little bit more in the field events than in any other event. I don't know why. I'm trying to figure it out. Even in the sprints, you know, they sometimes, that's why I wanted only one Lena Irby. I don't know if I had three Lena Irbys if they all were going to run under 50, you know. But then in the long jump, you have those three young ladies. They go out and go 1, 2, 3 because it's like a measurable effect rather than you racing. Right. There's a reason why you have, you know, race horses having the, what you call the blinders, mm-hmm. in a way. I can't explain it. And that's why, you know, probably a better person to ask that in the sprints might be Coach Holloway or somebody that has a lot of sprinters. He manages them that way. Maybe I need to learn more about it. So, but I found out when there's a measurable or tangible effect, either as a crossbar or a tape measure, and you have the same caliber of athlete, then there's competition. You don't have to say much. You don't have to say, oh, why did you let her beat you? Sometimes they don't. You just sit back and like one year I had my last year at Georgia, I had seven guys over 8,200 points in the decathlon. I was just sitting back and, you know, watching a movie, eating popcorn with these guys. Like you got to do a good job laying out your workout. You got to make sure you put them in some sort of autopilot where they know what is the routine. And that takes years. Now, it took me about 3-4 years to get these guys to that stage. But then you just unleash them, and next thing you know, you got four guys competing in Tokyo at the Olympic Games in the decathlon. So to me, there's more to that than coaching.
Makes a lot of sense. Wow. I had all these questions about triple jump and managing multis, and we didn't get to any of them because I just wanted to know about culture. And then, gosh, you answered and you delivered. This has been – we're going to have you on again and talk about more specifics in regards to – the step phase, and I know you're a big guy into the, you really like the hop and you want to make sure you emphasize that. We got to talk about that more some other time.
Oh yeah. You got to make more than 30 minutes because I can talk for hours about stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or have like a different series or something. But yeah, I'm a big hop oriented coach in the right hand punch, which, you know, you would see on my social media. You know, with Keptura and Jasmine have a very similar punch where it helps transfer speed, yada, yada, yada.
Well, we're talking about that next time. And if you would have us or allow us to have you back on. But Coach, we can't thank you enough for coming on. I know you're vacationing right now and getting ready to watch those skinny kids run very far in cross country. And then you're also have your off season. So you are a busy, busy man and doing great things. Where can we find out more? I know you're on social media, but you mind just like broadcasting that out so people can follow and, you know, see what's going on with the University of Illinois?
Yeah, yeah. I'm very active on my social media, Twitter and Instagram. You know, I like to promote a lot of what we do. We do need a lot of work in our social media department, which we're working on it. But they've done a really good job this year compared to other years. So my hashtag always remains find your greatness. Doesn't matter where I am. Or you see me hashtagging ILL or something like that. But my Twitter, you know, it's Petros Deca or Petros Cipriano. You'll find me on there. And I do post all the time, whether it's training or recruiting or happenings and all that. So we're very happy to be in position to have signed these kids. And we're hoping that will be the start of something special for the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, you're going to have to write a book about building championship cultures because you keep doing it. And so it's kind of fun to watch that from the from a fan perspective. Coach, we loved having you on. You did not disappoint. I was looking forward to this one. I know you and I have been trying to connect for a while.
Sorry for taking me so long.
you're kind of busy. That's quite all right. So I appreciate you so much. And we are such big fans and excited to see what your kids are going to do at the University of Illinois. Side note. Whoever does the marketing for your guys' posters, they do a really good job. I've copied the University of Illinois posters the last 3 of the last 5 seasons. I just changed the colors and make it look like my kids. So thanks, whoever's doing that.
Yeah, they do a good job with that. Yeah.
Love it. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about RelayBatons.com, who you need to check out as well because they power the podcast as much as On Track and Field. And stick around. You can listen to the CEO, Steve, in his beautiful radio-like God voice, and he'll tell you exactly what it looks like to get in contact with them on social media. So ontrackandfield.com and relaybatons.com. Steve, take it away.
Thanks to our guest, Coach Petros Cipriano, for joining us on this week's On Track and Field podcast. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved, meat and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meet awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackandField.com, cross country and track's one-stop source for everything you need for a successful season. Competition gear, spikes, training equipment, and shoes. On Track and Field.com has everything you need. And make sure to check out our new website, ontrackrunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes, featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. ontrackrunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at ontrack, the letter N, field, at ontrackandfield on Twitter and the gram.